Welcome, everyone, to the Friday night public discussion group of Perfecting Horizons Institute. We are on paper 44, section 2, which is right there at the bottom of old single column, page number 500. All right, till we finally got rolling on the seven categories of celestial artisans last time. We did that, you know, that first group, the archangel chose to call them, or decided, I suppose maybe I should say, decided to call them the celestial musicians. Another way you could think about them is in relationship to this next group. And so this next group called the heavenly reproducers. That first group are producers. See, so you have a pair here. You have those who are producing harmony, and then those who are reproducing harmony. And so that's the pairing here of these first two. And you know, by not just doing something simplistic, like giving them names like the heavenly producers and the heavenly reproducers or something like that, you know, they're trying to add to the, you know, what thoughts are awakened in your mind relative to these individuals. I mean, you notice they almost did, celestial on the one hand, heavenly on the other hand. So, you know, they're trying to get you to do what I just did, so, you know, just to notice that you have that pairing, and that's why they are juxtaposed with each other. All right, let's see, anything else that we need to say up front? I don't think so. Let's just, we'll be reminded of our humility as we get going here. So let's just get into it here.
Section 2, the heavenly reproducers. Mortal man can hardly hope for more than a meager and distorted concept of the functions of the heavenly reproducers, which I must attempt to illustrate through the gross and limited symbolism of your material language. The spirit Marantia world has 1,001 things of supreme value, things worthy of reproduction but unknown on Urantia, experiences that belong in the category of the activities which have hardly entered into the mind of man, those realities which God has in waiting for those who survive the life in the flesh.
Okay, now, you know, we've commented that our archangel author here is, you know, long ways above us in terms of basic mentality, doesn't have any sort of innate, immediate relationship to the way we think about things. Nonetheless, you know, when he says things like, you know, I despair, you know, whatnot, to come up with a way of relating to you, I mean, he hasn't literally given up. He's trying very, very hard and has gotten himself as synchronized to where we are as possible. Just before we get into kind of the most obvious things in that paragraph, let's look at the subtler things. So, you know, he is going to find little snippets out of the Bible, you know, and use those to help us relate, just like so many of the revelators do. Just because he's high doesn't mean he can't do that also. Remember, Divine Counselor does it a lot. So, I mean, the Archangel does it, you know. So he throws in, you know, they entered into the mind of man. You know, it's a pretty well-known chunk out of a well-known passage there in 1 Corinthians. You may remember it, you know, has to do with how you haven't seen or heard or even imagined the things that God has waiting for us, right? You know, that passage, so quoting from Paul, and you can see how outside of the quotes, he paraphrased the, that latter part, and those realities which God has in waiting for those who survive the life in the flesh. Right? So he's quoting and paraphrasing Paul. He even throws in just a colloquial expression that we have. Do you notice that? When you read the spirit Marantia world has 1,001 things of supreme value. Wonder why it's not exactly 1,000, and why is it 1,001? It's like, no, wait a minute. He just means our expression. It's a lot more than 1,001, literally, right? It's that expression that means, a great number. Okay? So, that's a simple example, not only of him doing his best to kind of meet us where we are, even colloquially, but, when I say you need to very precisely notice the details in the revelation, don't overplay that. Don't turn your objective consciousness off and just become a machine trying to mechanically notice, the sequence of letters in precise detail. Know when you're supposed to take something very literally, when you're not supposed to be. The point is always to reveal truth, not to reveal fact. Yes, sometimes you've got very precise facts that you should take precisely. If they give you Michael's, crater sun number, that's not, plus or minus 58. It's exactly that number. You have to always be using your discriminating abilities to know how to relate to what's being said. Just a real simple example there that everyone can appreciate that you're not supposed to be taking that literally, factually. Right, because if you do, Jesus will repeat your name twice. Yeah, and you don't, that's not good. John. notice those little details. That should kind of help you to warm up to the prickly archangel a little bit. Because he is, reminding us of how we are just totally inadequate to really consciousize what he's talking about here. So let's remind ourselves of that again. It's important. That's why he keeps repeating it one way or another, so that you don't forget about it. So he starts right off that we can hardly hope for more than a meager and distorted concept of the functions of these celestial artisans. Yeah.
So I have a question.
Yeah.
And it's maybe bigger than just this paragraph, but oftentimes in the book you see this for those who survive life in the flesh.
Yep.
And when you come to this class, you really kind of get an impression that most people probably survive life in the flesh.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But you see this a lot. You see the questioning of survival life. Can you speak to that for a second as to?
Okay, so two ways to think about when they say, like they're doing there, waiting, like how he's paraphrasing the Apostle Paul, realities which God has in waiting for those who survive, quote unquote, survive the life in the flesh. if you remember that this revelation is not just being produced for us, but is for general consumption, just like Jesus's fourth epical revelation here was being observed by those on high, and they were benefiting from that. I mean, they're not going to be giving this book to the people on the neighboring planet, even say not general consumption like that. But you always want to first of all, the universe doesn't revolve around us. So, put it in the big context. There are lots and lots of worlds that don't have a bestowal sun yet. Like the neighboring planet, for instance. And that issue of surviving the life in the flesh is very, very, at the forefront still. And you have those prerequisites of a jester, you know, indwelling that are in play very poignantly. If you don't manage to get yourself either in a position where the Supreme is utilizing you in some mysterious way in part of the whole, or you do that very definitive individual thing, like getting up to a third circle or something like that, you're not going to get an adjuster. You don't get a soul, and you don't survive this life in the flesh. Okay, but like you're pointing out, now that's you know, all those laws have changed since Pentecost on this planet, and in general, you know, we survive the life in the flesh. But then remember what I just said a little bit ago. The point of the book is never first to reveal fact. It's to reveal truth. There's a truth to what is said there that is still in play post-Pentecost. Just extend the life in the flesh to the first mansion worlds. Okay, it's still the case, you know, that you have to survive this initial, if it isn't literally, factually, flesh body, it's the early flesh-like Marantia states where, you know, survival is not automatic. You haven't fused with your adjuster yet. You know, think of a simple example of how they remind you of extrapolating this life like that. They will call you a mortal ascender. Right? You know, you aren't literally still, you know, that mortal self that died on your first mansion world, or on your first world when you're on the mansion worlds. You know, so you're going, well, that doesn't really make sense. I mean, aren't the mortals the ones that are on the initial worlds? Well, if you, again, remind yourself, you can still cosmically die before you've fused. So in truth, you're still a mortal. And they even go beyond that. They even call you a mortal ascender after you've fused. Because they want to remind you there's still a truth to you. I mean, just because you've fused and say you're now a third stage spirit, you know, or something, you know, up in Havona, doesn't mean that you don't still embody the experiences of a mortal. Just like it's still appropriate to call Jesus, Michael Jesus now. The soul of Jesus fused with Michael. He is still Jesus. He's just as much Jesus now as I will be Chris on the first mansion world. Right? My soul will be there, not this mortal self that's talking right now. Yeah. The mortal self, Jesus, is not alive anymore. That was a mortal self that died. So just, you know, look for the truth. That's the challenge, you know, always for us, especially, you know, for say 300 years now, mankind has been very, very definitively brought into relationship with the concept of facts. You know, from the moment we are educated, even preschool, we start to think factually. We're trained to think factually. You know, you go back 500 years, that wasn't the case. And so, you know, we're going to just have an automatic instinct to think very literally, factually, and we get our name repeated by Jesus. See, it's that same thing. You know, the apostles kept it. See, even way back then when they weren't trained like us. And so just, you know, keep that in mind. To know, it's another example of what I was just saying. You have to know how to properly interpret what's being said. And you're looking for an interpretation that doesn't just suit the moment. You know, it can't just rationalize the paragraph you're reading. It's got to be an interpretation that is in conformity with the whole text. So that you don't have this question, it's like, well, wait a minute, in that other place, it says we basically all survive in the flesh, so why are they talking about surviving in the flesh? I think I found a contradiction in the book. You know, see that, you know, people who think they find contradictions, you know, no, they've just discovered their ability to misinterpret the text to go towards the more distortion of meaning rather than the less distortion of meaning. And that brings us back to where we were in that first sentence, right? hardly hope for more than a meager and distorted concept of the functions of the heavenly reproducers. Yeah, and I must attempt to illustrate. Through the gross and limited symbolism, et cetera. I mean, and of course, you know, don't go modern on gross, coarse, i.e. not fine, not refined. Our very coarse symbolism. We don't have the language that can describe such minute, subtle complexity is what's actually involved in what these heavenly reproducers are doing. And he's got to use all these very coarse words. All right, so let's see, what else did he give us there? Again, you notice he's using that spirit hyphen Marantia. Remember, in case you're forgetting, don't ever forget as you're reading the Celestial Artisan paper that you're very fundamentally talking about spirit and the spirit aspect of Marantia substance. You know, it's the spiritual side of things that is, it's the spiritual substance of things that's being immediately manipulated, used as the medium for what's going on here, okay, which we'll see really definitively in the next section. All right, but the Marantia is the foundation one, so it's spirit hyphen Marantia, not Marantia hyphen spirit. And that's why it's with the constellation paper. Again, so you're just reminded of that constantly. Notice how he's trying to keep you in the proper frame here. All right, let's just read that tiny little thing before you read the first one.
There are seven groups of the heavenly reproducers, and I will attempt to illustrate their work by the following classification.
The only reason I want him to just read that, notice what he just did there. He said, I must attempt to illustrate, and then he repeated it. I will attempt to illustrate. Okay, just notice that. Okay, he's like I said, he's trying his hardest to not let you slip off into this false sense of, oh, I understand exactly what's going on here, right? And he's very clear, and so there's nothing really to be confused about. No, it's a very crude parallelism that he's drawing. It only illustrates. It doesn't describe or depict or okay, in any direct literal way. So just try to, to keep that in mind, that, you want to feel it in a parallel mode like that. Think about how he's trying to draw an illustration. Just like when I talk about the levels of meaning, I always point out, on those handouts, that here's one example of an illustration of the levels of meaning. If you take a particular illustration, just, fair, patient, kind, etc., that, illustration, that doesn't define the levels of meaning. That's just an illustration. That's a sequence that's parallel to the levels of meaning. So same thing here. To get yourself in the analogy mode, the same mode that Jesus tried to get us in. That's what a parable is. Right? It's not an allegory. It's an analogy. So don't go off into some mystical, symbolic interpretation. Where did he do that? Oh, yeah. I mean, when he said gross and limited symbolism, see, the very fact that he used symbolism, is trying to remind you, let your spiritual consciousness and its immature tendency to go to mysticism and allegory, that could start running free, and you'll go way off on the tangent that the apostles were always going on with his parables. They were treating him as allegories instead of analogies. Okay, so again, just trying to keep you grounded and notice all those details. All those things are, every word has some role to play in the whole picture the whole space he's trying to get you in. Okay? All right, so let's look at number one here.
1. The singers, harmonists who reiterate the specific harmonies of the past and interpret the melodies of the present. But all of this is affected on the Marantia level.
All right. So, the name, the singers. So, illustration, not literally. You know, so don't immediately think, the raised stands, and a choir and jiggling air molecules. Right. But the basic concept that they're, in the same way that they speak to one another up there, you can quote unquote sing to one another there. So it's he's saying that it's that mode of engagement as opposed to, in writing or something like that. It's oral. Okay, and remember, it's all about harmony. All these celestial arts, and no matter who it is that we read, harmony is the point. Right? So you have these harmonists who reiterate. A lot of times you'll just kind of let that word fly by, but notice that, take the prefix off, and it's iterate. That means to do it again. So to say reiterate means to do it again and again and again and again. I mean, it's emphasizing, right? So think about that he chose to say reiterate. So they go around and around and around. Reiterate the specific harmonies of the past. You have these harmonies that have been produced in the past, and these reproducers put them forward again and again and again, so that you're just bathed constantly in the harmonies that have been produced throughout the past, so that you are immersed in all of that past, and that just oozes into your pores and is incorporated into, eventuated into you, so that your evolutionary life is building upon as much of the evolutionary past that went before you as possible. Right? So, reiterating, and you could definitely get off on a tangent where he would feel very sad in his attempt here if you thought, oh, reiterate, like play the same songs over and over again, like America's Top 40 or something, like an AM radio station. So, he knows you're going to think of something very, that ends up being negative in our minds. It's like, don't play that song again, please. Right? I've heard that 500 times already today. But he did say reiterate. So there's a shade of that, but without the negative. To have that top 40 be lifted up to something that you could listen to it 100 trillion times and you'd never tire of it. Yeah. So they reiterate the specific harmonies of the past and interpret the melodies of the present. Harmonies on the one hand, melodies on the other hand, notice. Okay, remember when with the producers, you had those seven different forms. Each one of those was a melody form. Remember, that was the deal. You have seven different melody forms, so basically linear things that you are going to bring together, combine together into a sevenfold harmony. Okay, so you have those sevenfold harmonies that are reproduced, and then notice the role they're helping to play with the producers. You've got all kinds of melodies going on in the present, and they are analyzing those melodies and helping the previous group to recognize the harmony potentials of those melody lines that are just out and about. Okay. They're kind of doing the stage one for what the previous group does, and they literally actualize those recognized potentials. Okay. You see, interpreting the melodies of the present. But all this is affected on the Marantxa level, which we can't even remotely imagine. All right, number two.
Two, the color workers. These artists of light and shade you might call sketchers and painters, artists who preserve passing scenes and transient episodes for future Marantia enjoyment.
Okay, remember how with the producers they used that color thing? And, Barbara, you brought up that use of the word color in music, for the timbre. And I said, yeah, obviously, they want you to think of that, but not just that. And you can see here, it isn't so immediate that that it sounds like, you should be thinking in just a timbre, exaltation of the timbre sort of concept. Right? Artist of light and shade. Okay, that sounds a lot more like pigment kind of color, right? Right? Okay. So, again, don't, remember they're just analogies. It's just a crude parallel. And just, so don't, latch on to anything precise too hard. Just try to be in the spirit of it. Try to feel the truth of it. You might call sketchers and painters, and then he screams in agony at the picture you paint in your mind. But anyway, you'll see this number two compared to number three when we get to it here next. So these individuals preserve passing scenes and transient episodes. See, so just moments in time. Their job is to capture how a particular moment, out of context, you might say even, but just kind of in and of itself, that moment transcends the moment and is worthy of being eternalized because it embodies something of eternity. It's not a false eternalization of it. And so it's appropriate to use the word preserve there, like they do. Not conserve, but preserve. Yep. Well, I'll get you. Yeah.
Human artists can do this. A photograph will get an instant in time,
yep.
Of course.
Yep.
But an artist can take things that don't happen in an instant mm-hmm. and bring them all together in one portrait.
Right. And so the extent to which that's possible, so you see the analogy that he's invoking here. Yeah, and then you had another element there?
Well, yeah, from this particular illustration, I kind of get the feeling that perhaps these are individualized. Some of these passing scenes and transient episodes are individualized to the... So we may get a different one than the person next to us. We will individualize it according to our experience.
Oh, right. I mean, that's one of the things that's, that's very, very insightful on your part. So for those of you in the webinar, he's saying he's getting the sense that, that there's something that's going to be sort of innately individualized about your experience with these, artistic creations. Yeah, again, that's one of the things that is very hard for us to imagine when you have such living material that you're doing this in. Spirit is self-animating substance. And your personality is spirit pattern. It identifies very immediately with spirit phenomena, literal spirit phenomena. So your absolute unique personality, the more you really experience one of these reproductions, the more absolutely individualized it perforce must be, right? And that's the power of having the medium for expression here being, spirit, or spirit incorporated in Marantia substance, is that immediacy to your personality, as opposed to matter, to produce art in material form, there's a limit to how intimate you can get to it, related to it personally. But there's basically no limit here except the creativity of the artist. And that's why with each passing age in the universe of universes, as these artists get more and more skilled, more and more this individualized, you know, absolutely personal relationship can be discovered.
And our ability to experience it.
Right, yeah. See, and hence, you know, an ever greater potential to experience what couldn't be experienced before. Yeah. So that, you see, that's the thing that's, you know, think of shades of, like, when they say, when you experience the substance that the aisle is made out of, it's going to, that matter, you know, and supposedly, quote unquote, stationary matter, the, you know, the only thing that's stationary in the whole universe of universes is the matter of that aisle. So you've got this absolute stationary dirt, and you'll say, well, the only word I can think of to describe it is living. The contrast, see, between that. What you you know, theoretically know it is, but what you experience. Okay, so, yeah, it just, having such a living reality that you're related to. You know, it's what the matter that's on high is not a a false exaltation of the matter that's around us right here. This matter around us is the most remotely downstep thing, and the most it's the most difficult to really get an appreciation of what matter is via this very gross, see, very coarse, crude, shadowy expression of more substantive matter. You know, you'll be able to get more intimate with matter as you go up, and it will seem less and less dull and boring and not interesting to your spiritual consciousness. Okay. Meanwhile, back to our heavenly reproducers here. Okay, so read number 3 here and see the contrast.
3. The light picturizers. The makers of the real semi-spirit phenomena preservations, of which motion pictures would be a very crude illustration.
See, so go beyond the crudeness, immediacy of these two, see, and get to what I was just trying to get you to recognize, the truth that's flowing through those two, the contrast. There are some things that you can embody into just this capturing, quote unquote, of the moment. Other things can't be, even with all the skill of, like you're saying, of an artist to sort of bring the context, you know, into the single image. No matter how skilled, some things can't be truthfully expressed in a capture of a moment like that. It requires, you know, a quote unquote moving picture. It requires something that plays out as a sequence and isn't just a single frame. So we have a sense of that. Some things that where you can really capture the basic truth of what was going on there in a single well composed photograph by a photojournalist. And then others that, no, no matter how clever they are, you need an actual film clip.
Motion.
To get, you know, but of course motion, see, I mean, again, even these stills that they're talking about here are moving, you know, are dynamic and living and, you know, but see, it's just a matter of whether or not you can take one element, or you need a sequence of elements. The contrast between them. See, that's what they're trying to contrast. One frame or many frames. We get that even with the crudeness of photographs and move, you know, in animated movies. So, Right. So that's the contrast, and the very fact that they said color workers on the one and just light picturizers on this one. Remember what they said about the color ones back here, the color symphonies. This ranks among the highest accomplishments of the celestial musicians. See how, and Gene picked up on that right away. You know that it's going to probably take some very, very masterly ability to try to get truth embodied in a single frame, you know, as it were. You know, not as much subtlety involved if you actually, you know, take a whole sequence, you know, and let it fill in all of that complexity. All right, see, so that's how they're used. See, notice how they're using the language like that. All right. Now so those are kind of, those three are one flavor, and then notice how they kind of have a different flavor with the other ones here.
Four, the historic pageanters, or pageanteers. Those who dramatically reproduce the crucial events of universe records and history.
Okay, just that one simple statement. Okay, so, and we'll see the kind of, like I said, these build together. So, you know, dramatically, right? So you're thinking, oh yeah, we do that. We have historical plays. Right? You know, you can even have, you know, whatever, King Lear or something, right? Okay. So that idea of capturing the significance, you notice how they, you know, reproduce the crucial events of universe records and history. So the elements of history that are required for truth to flow in your consciousness about it. Remember how origin, history, destiny, you know that idea of making sure that you have the whole spectrum of the facts so that you can actually have truth flowing through that whole spectrum. You'll see that's what they're building up here. So they begin with the history component of the whole spectrum. So there's one element. And then number five.
Five, the prophetic artists. Those who project the meanings of history into the future.
Okay. Let's deal with the word prophetic first. Okay, do they mean these are prophets? You know, in the sense that Jeremiah, you know, is validated in the Revelation to have literally been a prophet, or Tenskwatawa, you know, is validated to have actually been a prophet. Is that what they mean by the prophetic artists? Well, or do they mean that, you know, sort of derivative use of the word prophetic that we have, you know, one of the, you know, the latter definitions, you know, or senses that you'll see in the dictionary. Well, you read it, so those who project the meanings of history into the future. Oh, okay, no, they don't mean literal prophets. They just mean that projecting forward in time, being able to extrapolate, you know, scientifically from the present to the future. What was that?
Interpreters.
Right. I mean, yeah, they have to interpret, but then they're extrapolating, they're projecting. So you go, okay, well, so why would he interject the potential for confusion? You know, why didn't he just say prognostic artists? And avoid that. I mean, you know, when you recognize that's actually what he means. He doesn't literally mean, you know, a prophet. He means a prognosticator. You know, someone who's projecting things forward, like your weatherman tries to extrapolate forward. Right? He just means like what our weathermen try to do. He doesn't mean, you know, like what Jeremiah did. Okay, wasn't engaged by a celestial being and, you know, etc. Right? Okay. So think about that. It's technically prognostication, not prophecy, prophesizing. So why did he say prophetic instead of prognostic? What's the medium here? Does it matter? What's the medium that they're using, these artists? We're reminded of spirit substance, right, is the basic, you know, medium we're talking about here. Which word reminds you more of the fact that it's spirit substance than material substance? Prognostication or prophecy?
Yeah.
Right. That's why they did. That's why he chose that word. You know, and again, he knows that we use it in that derivative form, or it doesn't literally mean the doings of a prophet. It means just like what your weatherman is doing. Right? And no one thinks that your weatherman is being contacted by celestial beings. At least I hope you don't think that your weatherman is being engaged by celestial beings to give you the weather forecast for tomorrow. Right? Okay, see, so again, see, notice how it's like, but other times when I see the word prophetic, I have to recognize that they're talking about a literal prophet thing there. Okay? It's like, well, how do you know the difference? How do you know when to assume it's just like the weatherman and when it's like Jeremiah? Okay. Well, that's why you're given an encirclement in the Holy Spirit and the ability to discriminate between two uses of a word. And if you don't have that ability, you're going to have more distortion of meaning, right? Not less distortion of meaning. You have to think on your feet. But that whole bit about allegory and the symbolism word they mentioned up there, ooh, and they said prophet here, so, you know, you could be off to the races and going off on a tangent just like the prophets always were and waiting for Jesus to repeat your name twice. Okay. All right, so, oh, and then now I'm back to the main story. Okay, so we had the history, see, and then we're seeing, so once you have the history put forward, then you have these that are projecting the meanings of history into the future, right? Trying to get the whole spectrum laid out here. What else do we have in this mode?
Six, the life storytellers. Those who perpetrate...
No.
Perpetuate.
Yeah, perpetuate.
Oh, there's a difference.
You're trying to be prophetic? Prognostic.
Those who perpetuate the meaning and significance of life experience, the projection of present personal experiences into future attainment values.
Oh, okay, so they're paired. So five and six are basically doing you know, a similar thing of this projecting forward into the future. But, you know, see, there's differences. One is, okay, the fullness of history projected forward. Here, it's not the history, but the present, see, and the personal, okay? So, really kind of that, you know, the collective and hence impersonal history, you know, going forward, so sort of the backdrop, the context, and then the individuals, the persons, and their life experiences and how they project forward. See, so they're painting together, they're going to paint this whole harmony, just like you had the seven forms of melody in the previous one. Think about this as a system, a sevenfold system, and how this all plays together to get another sevenfold harmony. Yeah.
Yep. You saw who they are, how they're created, where they come from. It's not like they're
right,
so, being, so they're getting, they're doing a bunch of stuff. I mean, when mm-hmm, I read this, mm-hmm. 4, 5, and 6, I'm sort of saying, oh boy, I'd love to see this reproductions of Jesus' life. You know,
yeah, right,
like
right,
what
right,
it really meant.
Right, right, right.
Kind of, and I'm just wondering, you know, and I could be a celestial artisan someday.
Right.
Where am I going to get this knowledge to be able to...
Right, to be able to, you know, to do this, right. Yeah. So now you think about, oh yeah, there's all those. No, it's not all conjecture. Is remember all those times in the book when you were reading a passage and your spiritual consciousness kind of just wanted to skip over it because it was just okay, recorders, yada yada yada. Now where's something that's interesting? Remember, there's this whole vast aspect of the universe of universes, beings that the only reason they exist is to assemble and maintain all of the knowledge of the universe of universes. So there's this vast library of knowledge, quote unquote, you know, that can be tapped into by beings like this and utilized. Right? It's gigantic. I mean, it requires the full life, every moment of countless beings to have gotten all the information accumulated for these artists to then do what they're going to do. Yeah. And so think about how much research you have to do, how much studying is involved if you're going to be one of these artists.
That's why it's a commitment.
Right. Yeah, it's a big commitment, because there's no way you can just do it in a flash in a pan sort of thing and have any truth embodied in it, you know, because the truth encompasses the whole. And the whole is really big. The universe of universes is a vast thing. Right? So, yeah. So you begin to see how there's no way you could, any of this sort of feels genuine if you're just reading what's immediately in front of you on the page. You've got to put everything you're reading into the context of the whole revelation, and you're reminded of, oh yeah, they did explain to me how there's this whole hierarchy of that accumulation of knowledge system and the transmission of that knowledge and on and on and on, recorded in triplicate and, you know, and what have you. Right? Yeah, okay, so, all right, so, so the backdrop and the individuals and seeing all of this all playing together, and then what else? This one, you know, really is a chuckler for your immediate spiritual consciousness.
7, the administrative enactors. Those who depict the significance of governmental philosophy and administrative technique, the celestial dramatists of sovereignty.
Yawn. Right. Right. So, you know, you're thinking, not only, you know, you're thinking gross in the other way. Right. So, you know, again, you know, but, you know, we've, you know, I don't have to explain it. You know, I've emphasized how he set this up. Don't let your immediate horrendous thoughts, when you read the word administrative, play into the interpretation of this and the corruption of it. You know, remember, when you actually see real administration, you'll want to build the tabernacle that the apostles wanted to build on the Mount of Transfiguration. You'll want to just sit there and stare at it for eternity. It'll be so cool and fascinating. You'll just want to get lost in it. Everything, no matter how prosaic we imagine it might be now, is it not. Everything is a poem of majesty on high. So you've got the backdrop, you've got the individuals, you've got the those who regulate the individuals in the system, the administrators. Right? So you have the whole system, the whole cosmic system. Each element is too big for one specialist, each element is so big that, you know, it takes a specialist to deal with it, right? So you have these 7 different specialties, and they flesh out that particular melody line, administrative enactors. There's a particular melody line, yeah. And it all comes together in a 7-fold harmony. That's what they're trying to paint again. And it was, we didn't have much difficulty in seeing that melody into harmony in the first group. It's a little bit more difficult here. You know, it'll be even more difficult in the next section to think of it, to have the word harmony pop into your head. Okay. But try to do that. Try to appreciate how the word harmony applies to things so beyond what you have ever imagined the word harmony could apply to. It doesn't just apply to la la la, toot 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 on the horns. Okay? It's a universal phenomenon. It's the universal harmony. The word cosmos means universal harmony. That doesn't mean the universe is composed of orchestras, or merely just the essence of orchestras. Okay? Because the literal, orchestra with, the trombone slide and the, whatever, is too coarse for your spiritual imagination. Now, everything is a symphony. Everything is a harmony. Okay? When you look at the Isle of Paradise, the substance that you're standing on, it will sing to you. And it is a harmony. Everything is alive like that. All right. Now, we're going for a power personality synthesis. I remember how I tried to remind you of that, earlier on here. So, not just ministry, but administry and everything, all in this great harmony. All right, let's see. Is there anything else there? Let's see. Maybe just notice again how those who depict the significance of governmental philosophy and administrative technique, they're just because of what I was saying about, the poetry of everything. It doesn't mean there isn't still scaffolding elements. The particular way a little pebble rolls when a spornage, disturbs it as he's walking through a garden, doesn't somehow have significance in eternity. Right? I mean, there are things that are just passing elements and aren't directly connected to eternity, no matter how high you go. Okay, but you have to have discrimination to know what is significant and what isn't, and they're pulling that out. And again, it's that universal harmony is not a science, it's not a religion, it's a philosophy, right? It's a cosmic philosophy. The significance of governmental philosophy, I'm reminding you of the word philosophy being in play here. Only a personal living philosophy can do any of the things 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 in the previous section, or 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 in this section. You can't do that as a mere religionist or a mere scientist. You have to do that holistically as a personal living philosophy, synchronizing with the universal philosophy, the universal harmony. All right.
What's that last phrase kind of leaves me puzzled?
Oh, the celestial dramatists of sovereignty?
Yes.
again, there are sovereigns. There is over control. There are sovereigns. There is over control. So you don't just, in the previous one, you've got the individuals, but they aren't self-governing individuals. What those individuals do only has the fullness of truth in the context of the actions and in the relationship to those actions from the sovereigns. The love that might play out in the personal individuals, the life story that the life storytellers reproduce, is not whole without the law that the administrative enactors play out, because in the power personality synthesis, in the wholeness, law and love are one and the same thing. Both have to be there to have the full picture. Right? So that's, I'm not saying everything I could say always, but if you have a question like that, just bring it out. Don't let me just move on if there's something really that you're puzzled over. Just like I said, your spiritual consciousness, if it just reads that, okay, moving on to the next paragraph, it doesn't find something that immediately is delightful. It doesn't delight in the word sovereignty or administration. So take your consciousness up until you do begin to experience delight, and then you're coming into relationship with truth. All right.
Very often and effectively, the heavenly reproducers collaborate with the reversion directors in combining memory recapitulation with certain forms of mind rest and personality diversion. Before the Marantra conclaves and spirit assemblies, these reproducers sometimes associate themselves in tremendous dramatic spectacles, representative of the purpose of such gatherings. I recently witnessed such a stupendous presentation in which more than 1 million actors produced a succession of 1,000 scenes.
So how are you going to do at this play if you're not patient?
Well, you got to have a different mind capacity.
Right, but I'm just bringing you that little joke because we often, you know, talk about how, you know, the third level of meaning, you know, is the gateway to the cosmos. How, you know, you don't even have a way into this experience if you haven't gotten above, you know, impatience yet, obviously. Oh, Christ, yeah, right, yeah, you know, but... Right, but you know, what I'm getting at, you know, objectively, it's going to be just transcendently beautiful, you know, and you won't tire one iota during those 1,000 scenes.
And you won't have to worry about drinking too much.
And you won't have to worry about drinking if you drink too much coffee or anything like that. You know, no intermissions or anything. You just go straight through all 1,000 scenes. But again, just reminding yourself of. You know, in order to get to that experience of the indescribable beauty and sublimeness of what that, you know, will be like, you can't experience that as an impatient animal origin self. Right?
I can think of as profligacy. I can't even say the word. Profligacy? It seems too much.
Oh, uh-huh.
Too much effort to spend on such...
Right. Yeah. Don't. Yeah. Isn't it time to get back to work? You know, instead of fooling around, you know, right, wasting time. I just wanted to remind you that you will have gotten beyond your impatient animal origin nature when you've discovered the delight that these beings have to offer you. All right, notice what the archangel's having great fun with the R-E prefix. You know, he's got reproducers to begin with, and then he brings in reversion, and he's got recapitulation, and he's got all of these parallel words to, you know, to remind you that we are, these beings are fundamentally doing something again. You know, you say, well, I mean, historical pageanteers, I mean, aren't they producing a new play on Broadway here? No, they're reproducers. The production was made by the evolutionary process, and it happened sometime in the past. All of life is a play like that, is a production.
Right? And we use the study forms and analysis of more mature music, you might say, like a symphony. You have an introductory mode, like dun 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 dun. Mm-hmm. But in later on, you have, and they actually call it recapitulation.
Oh, uh-huh.
Where it comes back in. That is a musical term, and it can be embellished, and it can have different harmony under it.
Yeah, and that recapitulation, you know, not only is it, is it a word that means repeat, just like reiterate means repeat, but, you know, there's a shade of difference. They don't just mean repeat. Recapitulation means repeat in a mode where you are synopsizing, encapsulating, you know, that whole bit about depict the significance, not all of the insignificant details, right? But you've encapsulated it into the bullet points, you know.
Right. You've already had it induced, mm-hmm. and then you've had
right.
things developed, and then you get to go back.
Right, you're coming back to the essence of it, and they're building something upon that essence. See, that's why it's a recapitulation. You know, see, just that, it's a repeat, but just in the essence, not in the in completeness, right? Because you want to build upon it. You know, all right. Okay, so anyway, so all those things, all the use of terms, what he's playing in there. Let's see. So what's the main point here? So you have one of these conclaves, Maharaja conclaves, or spirit assemblies. You've got a bunch of people that are going to come together, and you want something consequential to transpire in that gathering. What has to be there in order for that gathering to be consequential like that? The participants have to synchronize with the truth that's flowing through the event. Okay, they can't just experience the fact of the event, or it will be just like you're saying, a completely pointless waste of time. And they could have been doing something better. Right, so. These artisans, are used to try to get that flow of truth going in everyone, and then the actual event happens in the context of that flow of truth. And now, something consequential happens in that gathering. Without the truth, it's a waste of time. Right? So, you can read and read and reread the book. You can be as reiterative as you want with the book. But if you haven't read it in the pre-existent context of truth, the flow of truth,
you never read it.
It's not of any consequence, you're reading and reading and rereading. See how what they're saying here actually is trying to teach me something about how to acquire the truth of the revelation. Notice that truth is flowing through this paragraph we just read. It isn't just about Maharaja conclaves and spirit assemblies. It's about your experience sitting there on a chair in your room, reading the revelation. Did you prepare for that reading like they prepared for that conclave? Did you get the truth flowing first, and then you engaged the facts? If you didn't, why are you wasting your time? Because that's what you're doing. You're wasting your time. You could be doing something better. You could be out, feeding the hungry or something. Right? All right, so that's that. This is relevant. Figure out how it's immediately relevant to what you're trying to do in this crude, gross, whatnot life we're living here. Go ahead, Gene.
The higher intellectual teachers and the transition ministers freely and effectively utilize these various groups of reproducers in their Maharaja educational activities. But not all of their efforts are devoted to transient illustration. Much, very much of their work is of permanent nature and will forever remain as a legacy to all future time. So versatile are these artisans that, when they function en masse, they are able to reenact an age, and in collaboration with the seraphic ministers, they can actually portray the eternal values of the spirit world to the mortal seers of time.
Okay. So there's a few elements there. I mean, for those of you who have read the book for a long time, you know that when they said the higher intellectual teachers and the transition ministers, you know that transition ministers is a technical name for a group of seraphim that we'll read about in a few papers here. But if you don't know that, that's what they're referring to, a particular type of seraphim that work intimately at this level that we're talking about here. These beings are, again, using them as teaching aids. And then they also mention that, it's not just, using them like a glorified, slide for your overhead projector. You know, if you're a teacher who's been around a while and you still know what overhead projectors are. when you're done with that slide, you just toss it because it was just a transient illustration. It's not something that's, you want to try to eternalize. So they do things that are just for the benefit scaffolding in the moment, like with the educational process. But they also do things that are of permanent nature. And you were reminded of that up above when they said preserve, right? Not conserve, not something that is going forward into time in an evolving fashion, but preserve. Pour epoxy on it, absolutize it. It's here, as an embodiment of eternity. And so that reminds you of how all of this effort reaches a pretty an amazing transcendent level. That they aren't just saying, I declare that this should be preserved for all time. It's universally recognized to have that intimate a relationship to eternity that the universe preserves it. The mother deity wouldn't maintain this if it wasn't in relationship to eternity. You could declare that it's going to be preserved, but you'll watch it evaporate with time if she doesn't uphold it. She will determine whether or not it is actually preservable.
Very much like the experiences that are worthy to be sewn into the fabric of the soul.
Yeah, right. Right. For those of you on the webinar, you're saying, yeah, very much like those that are worthy of being woven into the fabric of the soul, exactly. When I say that the only thing that's getting woven in there is that which is real, which means it is connected to eternity. It's not a passing element. The real you is the eternalized you, not the passing temporal you. Right. You can't choose what stays and what fades away. That is determined by the upholders. Right? If it is real, it is upheld. If it is not, it is judged and not upheld. Right? So if you want to be a going concern, you need to be real. Don't fall for the illusion that grace presents to you. Right? It appears that you can be quite imperfect, and yet you are upheld. That's only because there's something between you and absolute law, grace. If you take the grace away, you disappear instantly. Right? You are instantly judged by absolute law. You don't conform to it, and you evaporate. Right? Lucifer forgot that. Right? Don't you forget it. Lucifer forgot that he was living in grace. And at some point, you will transcend that need for grace. You will conform. That initial degree of precise conformity to eternity is what makes that fusion event possible.
Okay.
Right? There's a thin little slice of you that can be glued to eternity. Now the rest of you, There's still work to do, right? But that one little tiny thin slice fuses to that adjuster.
And it's different. And you know, the term conforming to things today often has a
yeah, right.
connotation versus conforming to
right.
The spirit of the universe. Or, you know, it's like,
whoa. Right, well, you know,
it's not even a choice.
Right, because, I mean, why would I want to conform to absolute law? Because it's absolutely beautiful. Why would you not want to glue yourself to it? Right? I mean, the absolute of beauty, you know? Ever, I don't know if you've ever thought about that. What is the capital A absolute of beauty? Is it the eternal Son? Is it the universal Father? No, the Isle of Paradise is the absolute of beauty. Right, and if you glue yourself to the absolute of beauty, if you anchor yourself on the isle, now you're eternal, right? The one motionless thing. You know, can you somehow drift off now and, you know, on a tangent? No, you have your feet embedded in the one motionless fact, right? And you're secure. All right. So let's see. That last little bit. Just to note that, without not just pass over it. So versatile are these artisans that, when they function on moss. Okay. Remember, I mentioned that. You know, don't forget. It's not just seven parallel lines here. Melodies that are complete in themselves. Seven different melodies. The whole point is to get the harmony. For them to function on moss. So when they reenact an age, and in collaboration with the seraphic mentors, they can actually portray the eternal values of the spirit world to the mortal seers of time. On moss, they can actually manifest the whole and get you, foster your relationship to that whole. Even as a lowly mortal ascender, like they're alluding to there, right? That universal harmony, that whole, and that passage I repeat all the time from paper 112. You know, this distinction is vital, for in a cosmic system, the individual members are not connected with each other except in relation to the whole and through the individuality of the whole. See, so that's what they're talking about there, helping you to get that relationship to the whole, the Paradise Trinity. You know, and through the individuality of the whole to then have relationships to others. Okay, in real, true fashion. So very relevant to your ascending career and your progress. That's why they mention that they're working with all these beings that you know are helping you with your ascension career.
That gives meaning to something you've said before, that this is a divine dispensation. Well, the significance of that is this dispensation that we live in is relative to eternity, relative to the values of eternity.
Mm-hmm. And your job is to try to find those linkages to eternity that are always there, despite all appearances to the contrary. They're always there. You know, in the midst of crucifixion, scourging and crucifixion, Jesus found the links to eternity. Could you do that? Or would you see that as being devoid of relationship with eternity, you know, and devoid of potential? You know, he didn't. And if he couldn't have seen that, he wouldn't have been able to complete what he was doing. He couldn't have completed that relationship with supremacy that he was working on, right? Now, this moment is a divine dispensation. No matter how benighted it appears, can you find its linkages to eternity? They're there. Never dismiss, the moment as being inadequate, or somehow devoid of potential. It always has, is filled with infinite potential. Okay, let's see, anything else there? Maybe just so when all is said and done, you notice there's a lot about, like they were saying there, the reenact an age. This whole point that genuine evolution is predicated on the eventuation of what precedes it. You know, no matter where you, you know, picture, you know, no matter where you insert your consciousness into a stream of evolution, remember that that point in the evolutionary stream is built upon everything that goes before it. Okay, it's no bridges are burned. The moment is real because it's not just the moment. It's everything that went before it, and then that moment added to that. And then everything that went before it, plus that moment, yeah. And then the next moment added to that. Okay. That's what makes that moment able to embody, you know, a divine dispensation. Because it's the whole. You know, as whole as the whole can be up to that point. Okay, see, so that's they're encouraging your movement through the process of evolution, your progress, your perfecting by keeping you in full relationship with the eventuation of all that went before you. Okay, now let's look at this next group here, and again, we've got to challenge ourselves to think of them as just as much manifested, you know, just as much manifesting harmony as group number one, you know, with our celestial musicians. All right.
Section 3, the divine builders. There are cities whose builder and maker is God. In spirit counterpart, we have all that you mortals are familiar with and inexpressibly more. We have homes, spirit comforts, and Marantia necessities. For every material satisfaction which humans are capable of enjoying, we have thousands of spiritual realities that serve to enrich and enlarge our existence. The divine builders function in 7 groups.
Okay, so again, bringing in a little bit of Paul there from Hebrews, whose builder and maker is God. And, you know, we remember how we stressed this up in the preface, right? Let's see, where did he say that? Thousands of spiritual realities, right? Elements of the objective domain in the external world, right? Literal spirit substance, buildings made out of spirit substance. And you see, that's these in spirit counterpart, we have all that you mortals are familiar with, and inexpressibly more. We have homes, okay? The literal walls and floor and whatnot are made out of spirit substance. That's the first fact of spirit. Is it something that's out there in the external world, not something that's in your inner life? Completely different than anything any human has ever imagined about using the word spirit for something that's describing some object in the external world, like this cup and the wall of this room. Right? That's spirit, you know? And you can have a religion of the spirit, if you can begin to have a religion that actually literally is related to spirit as an objective fact, not as some fancy in your mind. Okay? No matter how fancy it is and how much you want to call it, you know, spirit, and say you have a religion of the spirit. No, you have a religion of the mind. Okay? A religion of the spirit is an objective religion instead of a subjective religion. Right? It's a religion founded upon the objective domain, not the subjective domain in your mind.
Isn't there both involved?
Oh, of course. Right. I mean, obviously it's of no significance to me if it's something in the external world that I can't bring into the inner life, right? But see, you know, just remember what you're trying to do. You're trying to establish an objective religion. Instead of the zillions of subjective, ridiculous religions that humans are constantly inventing in between their ears, right? You know, and if we had an objective religion, that religion would be on the same page for everyone, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's not a whim whether or not this cup is on this table or not. It just is on that table. And it doesn't matter how silly the thoughts are in my head, okay? Can I get a religion that's like that? It's not subject to my distortions and ignorance and whims.
Yeah. Yeah. Here again, they combine spirit and morality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. You see how, but again, you know, the first and foremost, we're talking about the spirit energy that's in the morality substance, right?
Glass of spirit-made wine.
Or is it wine made spirit? Let's see.
Spirit,
that's what
they call spirit.
Yeah, let's see here. Okay, so right, all this, you know, literal things. Just, you know, try to reimagine your whole outer life, but now everything is spirit substance or morancha substance. All right, and so our first group here.
One, the home designers and builders. Those who construct and remodel the abodes assigned to individuals and working groups. These morancha and spirit domiciles are real. They would be invisible to your short-range vision, but they are very real and beautiful to us. To a certain extent, all spirit beings may share with the builders certain details of the planning and creation of their morancha or spirit abodes. These homes are fitted up and embellished in accordance with the needs of the morancha or the spirit creatures who are to inhabit them. There is abundant variety and ample opportunity for individual expression in all these constructions.
Okay. Notice near towards the end, these homes are fitted up. Okay, I'm going to use that expression. In other words, there's a harmony going on here. And think about, you know, what's starting to happen very immediately here. You've got the literal stuff that your home is built out of, that you're thinking about and designing it and building it. But you are intimately involved in the details of that design. It sounds like a power personality synthesis to me, right? See? Right. Remember that harmony is a power personality synthesis. That you're at least that you're striving towards, you know. It's not, obviously it can't be the fullness of that power personality synthesis, because that's only achievable when the grand universe is settled in light and life. But see, nothing is prosaic, mundane, you know, everything is part of the cosmic system, you know, the home you're living in. You're trying to come into synchrony as a person with it, and it with you. You know, and that it with you, if you remember that this morancha substance or spirit substance is self-animating, right? That's an interplay potential. So what will that be like? Talk about being able to feel your home, right? Will you feel like you're at home there? Oh my goodness, you know. Right, I mean, the very walls will embrace you, will be fitted up to you, it will be in harmony with you, right? Again, you'll want to, can I just lay here in my bed forever? This is more than I ever imagined I could experience. I mean, I don't need any of that stadium stuff or, you know, I mean, who needs paradise when you've got this? I mean, the walls are caressing me. And so that's the, you know, the incredible things that await us. You know, like they said, you know, and never entered into the minds of man those realities which God has in waiting for those who survive the life in the flesh.
How much of it just becomes a new normal that you just eventually take for granted?
Right. I mean, it was all whatever to Lucifer.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, your challenge is to not fall into that trap of taking this stuff for granted. But I've tried to say, you know, I mean, start here. Stop taking any object. Stop taking a dirt clod for granted. A dirt clod is the most incredibly profound thing. And then the fact that you know that dirt clod exists, that you can experience it, and I mean, everything there is so beyond human imagination, right? The lowliest thing. Don't take anything for granted. That's the seeds that, that's the field in which sophistry is sown. When you start taking stuff for granted, right? The first principle of the Lucifer Manifesto is, step one, take everything for granted. That's the first thing Lucifer told you to do. You know, it all is automatically. You don't need a God for any of this. This is all just automatic.
That's where we are today.
Right? Everything can be just taken for granted. Nothing profound here. all right, so I remember what I was going to do. That quote that he pulled from Hebrews, you know, whose builder and maker is God. Do you ever stop to think, well, builder and maker, aren't those the same thing? You know, when we call God, you know, our maker, capital M, you know, or the maker, I mean, a little bit better, you know, are you supposed to think of him as your builder? Yeah. So they gave you a hint here. Number one are called the home designers and builders. That's what you mean by your maker, your designer, right? You say God is your maker, you mean God is your designer. Not that he's literally built you. You know, that's that simple-minded old notion, you know, that literally God is, you know, putting you together rib by rib or something, you know, molding you out of clay. Right? He's not your builder. Right? But he is your maker, you know, he's behind the design. But now, of course, God the Father, way, 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 you know, I mean, you know, the more immediate design is in, you know, secondary hands from the Father. But anyway, just, you know, so you notice there, that's why he brought that in, because he wanted you to think about that.
Well, just to say, as a point of reflection,
yeah.
You think about all the homeless people here.
Uh-huh.
I mean, home is so important, obviously.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, that's all I have to say is just to think about that. What is that?
And so for those in the webinar, she's talking about think about homeless people and, you know, and that whole concept of what's up with that. And right. I mean, notice that this is so fundamental that you have a home. You know, you get to the Isle of Paradise and you get a residence. This is always the case that you have a residence. You have a home. You know, they use the T-O-N suffix for places to indicate that they're home towns in some way or another. You know, Ascendington is the, you know, hometown for ascenders, etc. The concept of a home. Think about what I was just saying about the power personality synthesis. Think about how much a mortal is losing their way, coming out of relationship to the cosmos. And so it's not surprising that their life is just a wash and nothing. And I mean, if you want to have a life that is, that seems to be going somewhere, you can't just do it as a personality, as an individual, right? You fundamentally need a place to go with your direction. You need home to go with, you know, your personality. They're reminding you of that. I mean, as best we can, we need to encourage people to have that grounding. There is an interplay that they don't recognize that is catalyzing their growth, helping that growth to be maintained. And if you have someone that just really, there's just no way to keep them grounded like that. That reminds you that there's not much that can be done with a person like that in this life. They're going to need to get to the next life where they can actually, there's a phenomenon that can get properly grounded, and then it can begin to grow. But if it's not groundable, it's not growable.
Part of the problem is it's become a, for some people who have a tenuous grasp on the truth of these things, being homeless, they wear it as a badge of honor.
Yeah. I mean, what did God do? What did God do with the Bedouins? To, you know, when he decided there was going to be a, at least for a time, a chosen people, you know, a people that the Melchizedek receivers were going to utilize to try to keep the light of truth going. Did he just let them be Bedouins? No, he got them settled. He gave them a home and tried to encourage them to come into relationship with that home and stop being this homeless direction phenomenon, right? He needed to get them related to place. Yep.
Yeah, the key words you just said, related to and relationship, I think, are what we're talking about in the core here. When people are, you know, starting to become a little bit untethered-ish,
mm-hmm.
kind of, you know, that you see walking around or whatever, floating around, a lot of times I think that when they start to reground, it can be when they go gardening and get in touch with the soil, or they start doing some artwork and start taking time to be more objective and get relationship to something that they can, you know, relate to again, or relating to other people and, you know, talking and having someone actually listen and respond and having, you know, learn to do the conversation relationship thing again. I think relationship is really key to what we're after here. You know, when you're talking about a home, you know, you're relating to, you know, a place. And you're relating to things, and you have, you know, people can come to your place and have relationships with things that are kind of like you, kind of, or, you know, things that harmonize with you. And I think it's all about relationship.
Right. So again, that relationship, you know, here's a great example. We're talking about these literal buildings and stuff. This is the second of a pair of papers. Previous paper. Yeah, the constellation level, it's all about, it's the associative level. It's all about, why do you have a home? It's so there's a place for you to develop a relationship with that family of Univitatia and fellow ascenders. And right, so,
was Jesus homeless? I mean, the whole concept of home is just kind of fascinating.
Right. I mean, Jesus, he definitively had a home, throughout his, you know, pre-public life. That just reminds you again of how little sort of immediate, how little you can use Jesus's public life as an immediate reference for your life. It's a homeless life. You know, and it's, he's not, you know, he, I mean, like they point out, really once he leaves behind Third Circler, you know, in his Mediterranean tour, he's beginning to leave behind something that you can use as sort of an immediate example of your life. I mean, he's not just man. He's starting to become more and more, you know, true God as well. You know, obviously post-baptism, post-fusion, right, is true God and true man, and his actions, you know, you just can't use them as some sort of a reference point for your life. You know, so that's his further example. You can just see how he isn't living a life that seems to be very parallel to what we're talking about here. All right. Let's see. Did we get everything there? Let's see. We got off on several tangents. I got to make sure I get myself back in the space here. Pardon the pun about getting back into space. Let's just look at that last line before we go to the next one. There is abundant variety and ample opportunity for individual expression in all these constructions. So, just utilizing this relationship between things and beings to foster your individualization as potentially, if in the future, is an absolutely unique personality expression. Okay, so that's how that's playing in. So especially if you're thinking on the local system level to begin with, before you get to the constellation level, that's very much what you're up to. Remember, before you are going to do the socialization thing at the constellation level, you've got to get yourself more definitively individualized. And, we kind of have that concept of, we sort of got to focus our relative genetic individuality by interplaying with the knickknacks that we have in our house or whatever. Our house becomes a way of trying to sort of solidify, what makes us us, right? So you're doing it there, only now you're going to go beyond something that just reflects the kind of fancy animal you are to something that is more a direct augmentation and catalyzation of your personality, your real uniqueness. All right, so there's the individuals need buildings. What else do we need buildings for?
2, the vocation builders. Those who function in designing and assembling the abodes of the regular and routine workers of the spirit and Urantia realms. These buildings are comparable to those who construct the Urantia workshops and other industrial plants.
Builders.
The transition worlds have a necessary economy of mutual ministry and specialized division of labor. We do not all do everything. There is diversity of function among Urantia beings and evolving spirits, and these vocation builders not only build better workshops, but also contribute to the vocational enhancement of the worker.
Okay, so you see again how much interplay between thing and being they're pointing to here. To be a proper, well-expressing worker, you can't do it without a well-formed building. I mean, it's literally that enemy. You can't just do it in any old building. I see, so you have all these categories of buildings. I mean, you literally can't do work in the home. There'll be a dissonance between what you're doing and this self-animating structure that you're in, right? It'll be, you'll be fighting against it. You'll try to mold the vase and it'll tear your vase apart. However you want to think about it, something very simple like that. I mean, you literally can't do it unless the building is properly constructed around you, because you're in synchronization with it. How cool is this going to be, when you're just like, playing off the environment like this all the time. The builders are comparable to those who construct the Urantia workshops, and it's like, okay, your spiritual consciousness, maybe your initial immature spiritual consciousness can handle that, a workshop, and other industrial plants. Okay. 2 things. 1, not having the concept of industry be a negative. That's a sign of an immature spiritual consciousness, if industry is a negative word to you. And then 2, you've got a whole, economy going on there of some unimaginable fashion. There's industry. Yeah. So that, yeah, it's one of the few little kind of clues they give you, even in a crude parallel, to what's going on Marantia Worlds. Let's see, like I said there, the transition worlds have a necessary economy of mutual ministry and specialized division of labor. We do not all do everything. This point, I think we've talked about that here recently, didn't we? About how you don't want a picture that somehow, even when you get way up in your career somewhere, that you're just an interchangeable part, you know, that you can do that job just as well as anyone. No, I mean, if anything, you're going to become all the more precisely specialized and hence all the more useful. Your personality is absolutely unique, remember. So it's the opposite of, you know, Ford's interchangeable parts. Right? I mean, you're not an interchangeable part at all, you know, as an absolutely unique personality expression. So, so you have all this division of labor. There's some that can be vocation builders and some that can be home designers and builders and not vice versa. Let's see here. So what else we have there? We already mentioned that thing right at the end, that contribute to the vocational enhancement of the worker. All right, so this incredible power personality synthesis-like thing is always going on. All right, what about the next group?
3, the play builders. Enormous edifices are utilized during the seasons of rest, what mortals would call recreation, and, in a certain sense, play. Provision is made for a suitable setting for the reversion directors, the humorists of the Marantia worlds, those transition spheres whereon take place the training of ascendant beings but recently removed from the evolutionary planets. Even the higher spirits engage in a certain form of reminiscent humor during these periods of spiritual recharging.
Yeah, during their periods of spiritual recharging. All right, so here we are with the reversion directors again, and you know, notice another RE prefix word that, you know, you just don't tend to think about it as having a prefix. You know, there's creation and then there's recreation. Right? We lose it because we stick the C with the RE, you know, and say rec. But it's a recreation. So, not surprising that, you know, you might mention the reversion directors, an RE prefix again. Yeah, but think about that, you know, if it wasn't just recreation, if it was more literally recreation, I mean, in the word creation, you have creativity because you have a personality. See, so think about when you lift recreation up, you're probably going to want to put a hyphen in there, you know, and so that it's more obviously recreation, creation anew, that quote unquote play will be that that productive, you know, so not, like you were saying, Gene, you know, just superfluous activity. But something that is literally adding, you know, is the means by which you can be grown. You know, you're being added to through this. All right. All we know is that they're enormous edifices. we don't have much in the way of details because, of course, we couldn't comprehend it. But that tells you something. They're not small edifices, they're enormous edifices. So this recreation obviously is not something you're just doing by yourself. You're doing it in a very large, you know, collection, assembly of beings. That's probably why it's a recreation. There's the creation that's sort of begins with just the absolutely individualized relationship between you and the Father, and there's no other being in the universe of universes. And then there's what you can do in the context of the Mother, in the context of the whole, right? A recreation. Okay, so that's, you know, see, just try to mine everything you can get out of this, you know, figure out what this crude illustration, this parallel is trying to suggest to you. Let's see, anything else there? I think that'll do it. And it's not just ascending mortals like they're saying there at the end, but seraphim and whatnot, other spirit beings that benefit from this.
For the worship builders, the experienced architects of the spirit and Morantia temples, all the worlds of mortal ascent have temples of worship, and they are the most exquisite creations of the Morantia realms and the spirit spheres.
See, I remember how to keep reminding you that we have Morantia substance and spirit substance, you know, and so they, you know, he keeps stressing that. Okay, when you read that, do you think of something? You know, when they start using the word temple?
Church.
Well, you think of churches, right?
Beautiful.
But how about something in the Urantia book that you didn't know about until you read the Urantia book, and something about ages of light and life and...
Oh,
right, the Morantia temples, right? Is that what we're talking about here? Do you remember enough details about those quote-unquote Morantia temples that are constructed on worlds and they begin in light and life? And they tell you point blank, they are not places of worship. Okay, just if you had forgotten about that. Okay, so when you see this, you know, don't immediately start thinking, oh, are they talking about those that are involved? And no, these temples of worship are different than the assembly-like places that they're talking about.
That's where the
fusion is. Right, it's where you do fusion ceremonies and right and things like that. But you'll see here in a minute. But I just wanted to make sure you weren't going off on that tangent here when you saw the word temple and Morantia together. And they literally say the Morantia temple, see, you know. So not those Morantia temples. Let's see, anything else there? Let's see. Maybe just one thing to note here. You don't know exactly what to make of it, but sometimes they just point to the building part, and sometimes they point to the designing or hearing like architects. That might be suggesting something. I don't know. Is there some, when you're talking about these worship builders, is the actual building is secondary to the designing? Is it in some case that for some of these, the building is more than the designing, and others, the designing is more than the building? You know, they're all of them are both, but you might imagine that when you're talking about something, a temple of worship, it's probably the intricate details of the design that are very, very, important to this subtle synchrony that you're trying to establish that is true worship. You know, that synchronizing with the universal harmony. So that might be, why they do that. They kind of are stressing the designing part over the building part. Just a thought. And you'll see here when they you can go to the next one that it's different.
5. The education builders. Those who build the headquarters of Morantia training and advanced spirit learning. Always is the way open to acquire more knowledge, to gain additional information respecting one's present and future work, as well as universal cultural knowledge, information designed to make ascending mortals more intelligent and effective citizens of the Morantia and spirit worlds.
Okay, so you, you know, it's those who build, see, rather than those who design. So you know, say, you know, and you, so you're wondering if that's, it's probably significant, that the difference in how they express it, even though obviously they're designing also. Now, John, you know, notice how this plays into, you know, that question you asked a little bit about when we were reading the previous group and wondering where do they get all of this knowledge, you know, this information. See, here they mention, and notice they mention two different flavors. There's to gain additional information respecting one's present and future work, so the individual thing on the one hand, as well as universal cultural knowledge. And then, you know, and when we were talking about those previous ones, we had the big picture backdrop, and then we had the individuals, you know, in that context. So see, they're even pointing out that, you know, this vast educational regime that we're going to be ascending up through, you know, and all of the information gathering that goes on to make that possible. Yeah, they're here. They're stressing how you know, it has both that individuality element and that collective element or the whole element to it. All right, so yeah, it's all this vast, elaborate scheme.
So Chris,
yep.
You know, whereas really a lot of what we think we learn here, we don't remember.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't come with us.
Right.
As we progress through the mainstream worlds, et cetera, we probably take a lot more with us.
Yeah, I mean, this relationship to knowledge, for those in the webinar, if you couldn't hear that, I mean, about how we, a lot of our knowledge here is not likely to be taken up with us, you know. It's not somehow hardwired into your soul.
Relevant.
Right? But there are elements of knowledge that are hardwired into your soul, things that actually have more universal significance, you know. That's why it's so important to, you know, have more and more a spirit substance body. So these things that you're acquiring are literally molded into a substance that is not subject to the second law of thermodynamics, that doesn't unravel. You know, you leave the local universe as a first stage spirit, where you literally have spiritized yourself. You have a spirit body, and your mind is seated on that in sort of indelible substrate. That's why they call Salvington, Salvington. Why is it called the saved kind town? Salvington. Because that which can be spiritized is that which can be saved. You know, so talking about being able to actually save your knowledge and not have it sift through your fingers.
That would be the point.
Right.
Get it.
See, you leave, you know, the local universe, you know, as an eternally saving phenomenon. I mean, you now in and of your own nature can hold on to what you acquire eternally. You know, it's literally made indelible in you. And you know, more and more, you don't have to rely on someone else's record. You know, what you are a record as well. Now there is a copy of what you have, you know, in the universe records, but think about how literally you can think of the law being written in your heart. You know, when you actually are a substance that can be written on and it doesn't blow away, you know, in the next sandstorm. Right? So that's, you know, you can eventually you're going to get onto the Isle of Paradise, and you know there's those Supernafim that you'll relate to that are about knowledge, and then you'll relate to the ones that are about philosophy, right? And you know they're going to be cementing that fundamental knowledge, and then you're going to build a living philosophy upon that knowledge that is ready for the cosmos infinite, ready to begin its journey into the cosmos infinite.
And then they say, I think, not even a language. You just kind
Right? You know, we remember how we read it in there, the end of the first section. Harmony is the speech of Havona. Right? See, so they're teaching you how to speak here too, see? The more you can embody this harmony that you're being immersed in and subjected to and whatnot, the more you're learning how to eventually speak in the central universe.
So all of this, I guess, is gradual experiencing of the Supreme.
Yeah.
So when you finally get to the manifestation of the Supreme, we all pretty much have got to the same place in a way.
Yeah, when you get to that final manifestation of the Supreme, and we do that all together, and remember, what you have to have a very, very precise, intimate sociability to the Supreme Being in order to make that last step from a six-stage spirit to a seven-stage spirit, because the Supreme Being is literally going to give you a spirit fragment, right? Upsteps you to a seven-stage spirit. Okay, he's going to give you a fragment of himself. So you've got to be like that. You have to embody that harmony of the total. That is he. See, or those that spirit fragment won't mesh with you. You know, unlike with the Father giving you a fragment, where the only relationship is through the mystery of mysteries, because you couldn't get two things that are farther removed from one another. You meet that fragment at eye level. See?
Supreme.
Right? That fragment from the Supreme Being. Yep. Okay. Let's see here. Did we get everything? Let's see. What else do we have here? I think we got everything there. Oh, maybe just, you know, one little thing to notice. Remember, intelligent and effective citizens. Right? Fifth ethical revelation, you are a cosmic citizen. You know, you're more than just a child or even eventually an adult of God, the Father. You're a cosmic citizen.
You got your green card.
Once you've fused, you know, you're actually called an ascending son. So... Before that, you've got a green card as a faith son. All right.
6, Marantia planners, those who build for the coordinate association of all the personalities of all realms as they are at any one time present on any one sphere. These planners collaborate with the Marantia power supervisors to enrich the coordination of the progressive Marantia life.
See, so that is some very fascinating, inscrutable thing about sort of building the matrix in which all the components move. But we understand that. We have, designers that work on, parts of a city, but then there has to be those that, really have an eye on the whole big picture of the city. So you've got these, just like you have city planners, you have these Marantia planners, and they're not just going to be overseers of the ones that are actually designing and building. They're building too. See, like I said, there's some matrix, some lattice work, to all
like
of this.
Matrix.
You have to. These parts have to somehow fit into a superstructure or something, however you want to imagine it. Yeah, okay. So anyway, and then read those last two together and wrap it up here.
7, the public builders. The artisans who plan and construct the designated places of assembly, other than those of worship. Great and magnificent are the places of common assembly. While neither of these structures nor their embellishment would be exactly real to the sensory comprehension of material mortals, they are very real to us. You would be unable to see these temples could you be there in the flesh. Nevertheless, all of these supermaterial creations are actually there, and we clearly discern them and just as fully enjoy them.
Okay, so he reminds us again of the literalness of these facts in the external world. He's not going to let us get too far from that thought. And notice the word temple popped up again.
And they don't build the places of worship.
Right. See, so that's what I'm... See, notice there's two different kinds of quote-unquote temples. Right? There's the worship temples. And then there's these... Okay, so the temples that you get on a world when it's initially settled in light and life, see, that's this kind of temple. The places of assembly other than those of worship, that's the Marantia temple on inhabited worlds, that kind of a temple. And they are great and magnificent. You know, the only thing that remains, just as we wrap it up here, is to try to somehow pause before you go on to the next section, as we'll do next time, and think about that sequence of seven the same way you thought about the seven in section one. Spiritual sound, spiritual light, energy, impingements, color, hearts, symphonies, all that sort of stuff. I mean, can you somehow think of each of these as being a melody line? And the harmony is not really there until you have all seven interplaying together, and that this is just as transcendent to experience as it is to experience those musicians putting those seven elements together. You know, that these buildings are just as grand a symphony, right? You will just want to float on and bliss into it, right? What it feels like to experience these seven melodies being brought together. And you notice, see, there, you know, you have these Marantia planners that are helping to ensure, right, that this does all play together.
And you can afford the rent.
Right? Because there is an economy, so you will be able to pay the rent. you will have to earn your your stay. Anyway, so there's just, I mean, it's obviously not very immediate, but somehow challenge yourself to try to somehow feel just as inspired and yearn just as deeply to have this sevenfold experience as you did either of the previous two sevenfold experiences. And remember what this sevenfoldness is. It's not the sevenfoldness of the seven master spirits, you know, predicated on the three persons. It's the sevenfoldness of the Trinity. Right? We're coming into relationship with the whole. You know, you and I will be able to have a more personal interrelationship because this is, will bring each of us into a greater relationship to the whole. These sevenfold things are different elements of the Trinity. More and more you're becoming in relationship to the Trinity as you incorporate one seven after another. And then all the beings that you're interacting with comes in groups of seven and subgroups of seven, and you know they're all different parts of the Trinity, the whole. And the more sevenfolds that you can get, the more you can love your fellow, you know, creature. That's what you're trying to do here. All right, let's take a moment to reflect on that.